This is Bulls Beat on Bulls Unlimited. Bulls Beat is your stop for exclusive interviews, highlights, and the very latest on all sports at the University of South Florida. With today's show, here's your host, Derek Sharp.
And on this Wednesday show, a ton of postseason honors to hand out to the men's basketball team, including Coach of the Year and Co-Player of the Year. And, of course, there's going to be a game in a couple days after all these accolades. We'll preview that in a couple days. You know why? Because the men's basketball tournament begins today, and the Bulls aren't playing in it until Friday. And that's where you get to be if you get the double bye to the quarterfinals and, of course, if you are the regular season champions. Well, speaking of double bye to the quarterfinals, we will check in on the women's side. Of course, they lost on Monday in a tight one down to the wire. We told you how wide open the American Athletic Conference is in women's basketball. Well, trust me, it was a heartbreaking loss for the Bulls. And since they lost, the next four teams to go down in defeat suffered far worse heartbreak. It's just been wild. The championship game tonight on the women's basketball side of things will feature the 9 seed against the 10 seed. And do not color me surprised, there has just been amazing action in Fort Worth so far this week. The team that defeated the Bulls on Monday, UTSA, had a 9-point lead with 4.5 minutes to go last night and lost it. East Carolina beats UTSA. It'll be East Carolina, the 9 seed, against the 10 seed Rice. We'll give you a women's basketball recap and some of the highlights of how things went down, possibly ending the Bulls season. There is a chance they could play in the WBIT. We'll give you those details here as well. In our second segment, man, what a couple of days for softball. They go 3-1. On Monday's show, we told you they were going on the road for the first time against a good FGCU team. The Bulls were up 1-0, lost it on a 2-run homer in the 6th, had to turn around and try and regroup, did in thrilling fashion, and then twice yesterday against Colgate, fell behind early and won them both, including a walk-off in 8 innings. So we didn't do those games on the radio. It would have been a tight squeeze getting back from Fort Worth for me to be ready and do the broadcast, and plus I wanted to spend some family time, but we'll tell you what happened for sure. We will be at Reb McEwen Field tonight for baseball going up against Maine. We will let you know about that one and tell you that Bobby Bozer didn't just win Player of the Week in the conference, which he needed to. He won national honors as well. We'll also tell you about tennis, a Player of the Week on the women's side, even though they lost a really tough one on Tuesday early afternoon, and then the men followed that up with the victory. So plenty ahead. Basketball here first, then softball, baseball, and tennis in our second block. Well, no surprise. In fact, it was unanimous, but awesome that Amir Abdur-Rahim was officially named the Coach of the Year. And seems like maybe the folks at USF knew it a little bit ahead of time, because I don't think they were going to whip together that video. Hopefully you saw it on the USF men's basketball social media feeds that had a bunch of his former players, some that are in the pros, Tom Crean, who is a cohort, and everybody wishing well, and Bobby Pascal, Charlie Bradley, Chucky Atkins. That's a pretty much must-see video congratulating Amir Abdur-Rahim, as you all know. Coached the Bulls to the conference championship, 16-2 overall, in a 15-game winning streak that the Bulls had halted against Tulsa on Saturday. Also, of course, Michael Kelly, the man who hired Amir Abdur-Rahim in that video, that I would direct you guys to go check out when you get a chance. As far as first team all-conference, Chris Youngblood and John L. Davis were both on it and were named co-players of the year. And I found this exceptional, by the way. Again, the coaches vote on this. Normally, you would just, what, go to the leading scorer. Well, John L. Davis was 4th in the conference. Chris Youngblood, 10th in the conference. But it shows you that the coaches recognized his value, and we all did here. Youngblood averaged 15.3 points a game, shot 41% on threes, and as you know, was just the clutchest performance, the leader of the team that was the conference champion. Selton Miguel, who ironically coach calls the MVP of the team, was named most improved player and unanimous as sixth man of the year. He does come off the bench, so that was probably going to be the easiest part of that. The defensive player of the year, UAB's Yaxel Landenberg, he was also on the first team, along with, of course, Youngblood and John L. Davis. The leading scorer, David Jones, was on that first team, as was Jason Edwards, the sensational sophomore from North Texas. Miguel was named to the second team. Well, you look at some of the guys on the second team, the big 7-foot center for FAU, Vlad Golden, Lakai Patterson, who was Charlotte's leader, Elijah Martin, another FAU Owl, and Zurich Phelps from SMU. P.J. Haggerty, who I would have probably put a little bit higher, the freshman who torched the Bulls, of course, was on the third team, but that just shows you how tough this league is. And one other selection for the Bulls on the all-freshman team, Jaden Reed. So they've got some of those feathers in their caps. You know that they'll, according to their coach's wishes, keep it humble with those honors. Now, the tournament actually starts today with two first-round games, the teams that finish in the last four spots. Believe it or not, there was a five-way tie for last place, basically, but it's going to lead to some entertaining basketball, I think. Rice and Wichita play the first game, UTSA and Temple the second game. Rice and Wichita are the two teams on the Bulls' half of the bracket. The first game Thursday will determine their opponent. That'll be at 12:30 our time, number 8 seed East Carolina against that number 9 Tulsa team. I just mentioned Haggerty scoring 32 on the Bulls. He actually was the second leading scorer in the conference. Then that'll be followed by the 5th seed Memphis against today's Rice Wichita State winner. The Bulls on Friday will play at 1 o'clock, and again, we'll know their opponent on Friday's show. We will preview the game for you then. UAB is the 4th seed, and so likely if the Bulls win Friday, they'll get the UAB Memphis winner. And, well, that'll be interesting to see. And we won't get into it until we have to. And that would be if the Bulls do not win the AAC tournament. The whole situation with not really being considered a at-large team and how, well, this isn't something that I've come up with in the last week. I have been a fan of expanding the tournament field for a while. And if you think that 68 covers all the good and really, in the Bulls' case, great teams that deserve to get in the field, get into the field. Well, you obviously are seeing now why the tournament field needs to be expanded, but we won't get on a soapbox about that or anything like that, and might not need to because the Bulls do control their own fate in that situation. And again, Friday, we'll preview it for you and know that Jim Lighthall and Joey Johnston will be on the air Friday at 12:30 live from Fort Worth. Speaking of Jim and Joey, their calls throughout the course of the season, even going back to some early stuff against FSU and, of course, the comeback at Memphis, their calls were featured prominently on that video I was talking about. You could tell how much Amir Abdur-Rahim appreciated it because he sat down with the media after all the news came out. Here's some of his comments on being Coach of the Year, and then we get into what he has to say about Chris Youngblood and Selton McGill. We'll save some of his stuff about this week for, well, Friday's show.
Awesome group of young men that allow themselves to be coached, to be pushed. You know, all glory to God. I can't take credit for any of it. That video, man, boy, y'all almost had me up here crying, man. Special people I've known all of my life. I got my big brother here with me today. And then just some special people that I've gotten to know over the last year. President Law, Charlie Bradley. I've known Chucky for a long time. You know, Radinko, Coach Pascal, like all of these people. Michael Kelly, you know, all of these people, they play a huge role to a staff getting honored as Coach of the Year. And as I said to Michael Kelly last night, a team wins a championship, but it's an athletic department, it's support staff, it's a lot of special people behind the scenes that help us win a championship. And so I'm just grateful and thankful for the community, for the support, for our fans, for the Forever Bulls, the coaches that have been here. Just very thankful and grateful for them. And again, to God be the glory. Man, I think I've said everything about Chris anybody could possibly say, but the thing that people don't get to see about Chris, yeah, he's a good player, but man, he is a phenomenal person. He is a phenomenal person. And that's a credit to Dupree and LaDonna Youngblood, his parents. Chris comes to work, you know, he comes to practice, I should say, but he'll say, I come to work, he does. He comes to practice, he comes to the facility every day with the same attitude, a consistent positive attitude that's built on work. And, you know, you got to sometimes save Chris from himself because he will stay in that gym all day long if he can. He's so deserving of the award, but as he just said upstairs, you know, I get to be player of the year because of my teammates. And that's just the type of person Chris is. When I got the job, like I instead of calling people and asking, hey, what was he like? What do I got to be ready for? You know, the only thing I did, I just went and started watching film and spending time with him. But you had people reach out on their own and give their opinion of, you know, yeah, you listen, but you form your own opinion based off your interaction. I'm so glad I was able to do that, because Shelton has been, I think, sixth man of the year and most improved. But just watching him grow and improve, not only as a player every day, but as a person, as a man, like, it's a reason why he won that award. He played well, but if somebody met the person, Shelton Miguel, today, and they knew him a year ago, I think they see a better man, a better person. And I'm proud of that.
Well, we had a dramatic stay and a fun stay in Fort Worth. Had a feeling that there might be a heartbreak at some point for the Bulls, unless they won the whole thing. It was not going to be a fun ending, and maybe an ending to the season, maybe not. We'll get to that in a second. But their chances at making the NCAA tournament ended with Monday afternoon's 58-56 loss to UTSA. And again, the Bulls have company. We'll get to that in a second. But in their game against a team that beat them by 23 points during the regular season, it was the only one of the Bulls' 8 conference losses. They went 10-8 in the AAC. That's why they were seeded 5th. UTSA was seeded 4th. It was their only blowout loss, and UTSA added a big piece returning from injury late in the regular season in Jordan Jenkins, a 6-foot dynamo who is going to be playing professionally for sure in her next step in her career. So the Bulls didn't have to worry about her at first because she came off the bench. And unlike the meeting in San Antonio, where the Roadrunners were left open for threes because their stats didn't show them as a three-point shooting team, they made less than 5 a game. They made 5 in the first quarter alone. Kira White, their point guard, who is exceptional, would hit 5 herself in the game and score 23 points, while the Bulls as a team were just 4-for-23 on threes, got out-rebounded 55-33. By the team that is 7th in the country in offensive rebounds. So they played some zone, but they started out in man-to-man, and sure enough, there were not a lot of threes dropping on the other side. And both teams are good defensive teams. In fact, UTSA leads the league in field goal percentage defense, but the Bulls were holding their own, and it was a close game. Vicky Blasic hit a 3 in the first quarter. Bulls did not shoot the ball particularly well, 5-for-21. Bulls were missing some layups. They've got some height underneath, and you could tell they were affecting the Bulls there. However, they got off 21 attempts to 15 for UTSA. That is because the Bulls had 7 offensive rebounds to just 1. Yeah, the category that UTSA dominates in, the Bulls were getting the job done. Carla Brito had 5 rebounds in the first quarter alone, and so the Bulls showed that this was going to be a tight game. In fact, it was 16-15, Roadrunners entering the second quarter. The Bulls held UTSA to just 9 points in the quarter, and you'll hear it here right after UTSA took the biggest lead of the game, which was not a big number at the time. The Bulls' Vicky Blasic had a response.
Sydney Love puts her head down, has to give it up to White. That's a nice look, and Jenkins is fouled and 1. It catches it in the air. And I'm telling you, she is sensational, and White with a tremendous pass over the defense. Just an exceptional play. I don't know if Brito really knew what was going on there. I don't think that was a true foul. She just sort of tried to knock the ball away and ran into Jenkins on the aftermath. So Jenkins give her 9 points. She makes this free throw 10, and if she makes it, it'll be the largest lead for either team. And she does. It's 24-20 with 2:51 to go. So a tremendous 3-point play by Jordan Jenkins. And this is the 9th game of the season, and they are a really good team without her, and they're an excellent team with her. It's a free throw by Vlasic, who gets to 10 points herself. 24-21 UTSA, that one is also good. And it's back to a 2-point margin. Bulls hitting 22% from the floor. But obviously, they are right there in it. Now they settle into a zone defense to try and give themselves a breather. 2 minutes to go, Jenkins wants to take Aveline Lichtschipholt. Turnaround jumper looks short, and it is. Great defense by Ava, forcing her to fade away from 12. Bulls look to run again. Let's see if they can do it under control with Blasic. Nice shot by Vicky. That was absolutely under control. And the Bulls have tied it up at 24. She's got 13 points and has that look about her. That's a nice feed by White to Jenkins. And she misses the layup. Brito gets the board, but gets tied up. She needs some help from a guard. In fact, she'll spin out of it herself. Up the court to Blasic. She's got Levy in the corner. Does not pull the trigger. Romy is tired. She'll need this halftime break more than anybody. Minute and a half to go. Bulls have scored the last 4. Jenkins has missed a couple of shots. And the Bulls are going to make their second substitution of the half if there's a whistle in the last 80 seconds. Blasig is going to have to put up a long three. Good! Vicky Blasig! Second main three of the day for the Bulls. Second big fist pump. And it's almost like she played it that way. Now the Bulls want to stop. They have the lead, 27-24. What a shot by Blasig.
Incidentally, on that Jenkins alley-oop, and this is something I've noticed over just the last 2 weeks, that whoever's running the stats in certain games considers those a dunk because Carla Brito has gotten credit for two dunks on alley-oops. Of course, they weren't actual dunks, and that was an identical play there that Jenkins got credit for. Now, the first half ended with Vicky Blasig making a little bit of a mental error. She was great, as she is, and she did it twice against Wichita properly, you know, trained to give fouls at the end of quarters when you have fouls to give. Well, she committed a foul with 4 seconds left. The Bulls didn't have a foul to give. She went to the bench, not as punishment, but just not to pick up a third foul. And by the way, that meant that Maria Alvarez came off the bench and played 4 seconds. Also, Lauren Putu played 35 seconds for Evelyn Luchaschipholt. Now, Laura was the star, along with Ariel Wilson, offensively in Sunday's win against Wichita. But on this Monday, in effect, the Bulls just played six players. And we'll get deeper into the offseason and who might not be returning for next year. But it was pretty clear that Jose Fernandez was shortening his bench to the extreme. In effect, you only had subs at one position, and that was the power forward with Carla Brito and Danny Gonzalez both doing good things. But Ariel Wilson, Romy Levy, Vicky Blasig, and center Evelyn Luchaschipholt either actually played all 40 minutes or in effect did. And when you are playing and having to win four games in 4 days, maybe your legs get a little tired. So certainly the Bulls will have some issues to address in the offseason. We'll address here shortly whether the offseason is now or maybe in a week or so from now, depending on other stuff. We'll get to those possible postseason hopes and the second half highlights, especially a dramatic ending when Bulls Beat continues. And then we'll have baseball, softball, as well as tennis to recap for you.
Back to the Beat. Bulls Beat continues with Derek Sharp.
Three doubleheaders in a row for softball. Their last one didn't go well. Their next one was on Monday and didn't start well, but three wins in a row for softball since. We'll have a full recap along with getting you set for today's baseball action. We'll be back on the air with baseball at 5:45 and then some tennis for you to close out Bulls Beat. But picking up where we left off with that women's basketball game, the third quarter looked pretty promising for the Bulls.
A rare turnover by Jordan Jenkins, who has 10 points, but again has been stuck since the and one. That came at the 250 mark of the first half, so about 8.5 minutes. Levy open for three, big shot, she knocks it down. Romy Levy knocks the three, 40-36. So underneath their own basket is where the Bulls will throw it in. Wilson looks for Levy, in rhythm. Oh yeah, Romy Levy having her a quarter, 9 points, and the Bulls have their largest lead. And the crowd behind the Bulls bench is rising in volume. Ball tipped away, good defense by UTSA. They got numbers the other way, and they're gonna score with Jenkins, who fell down trying to draw the foul there. But the Bulls dribbled into a corner and lost it, 42-40. So the 6-point lead has quickly been sliced. And like we've been saying, it's gonna be a close finish. It's gonna be a barn burner here in Fort Worth. Wilson, over to Blasig, wide open three, boom! Vicky Blasig! Just her first make from distance in this half, but gets her to 21 points in the lead, back up to 45-40.
Unfortunately, after that, the Bulls, and this is one of the stories this year, unfortunately, and boy, did she do a lot for the Bulls, Evelyn Luchaschipholt, but sometimes had issues finishing underneath, and she missed three straight layups. She actually grabbed two of her own misses and ended up getting 10 rebounds by the end of the quarter, but unfortunately, they couldn't get the lead back up to 7, and it's almost like it carried over. Because UTSA scored the first 9 points of the fourth quarter, the Bulls got shut out for the first 5 minutes. And we chronicled this on the air. The Bulls, just in their 8 conference losses, in the fourth quarter we're talking about, their field goal percentage was right around 30%. Every other quarter, all season long, win or lose, they shot a little bit above 40%. Well, guess what? Monday afternoon, fourth quarter, 4 for 14. That's 28.6%. However, they did get 2 quick buckets. Danny Gonzalez, Vicky Blasig, and we were tied. It went back and forth, but Jordan Jenkins took over. She had a couple of and ones where she actually missed the free throw, but back-to-back buckets that put her team up five. So the Bulls were in trouble, but got a big shot, setting up the drama at the end. Here's how it sounded.
Gonzalez looks for Blasig. Love has been preventing her from getting open threes. Vicky has to go behind her back, steps open to Danny for a three. Go! Danny Gonzalez with a clutch tray. It is 58-56. The Bulls will defend here. White, the point guard, gets it with 10. They want to feed it to Jenkins, but Brito is fronting her. 6-5. There's a nice move by White, and they call the charge. Yes, they do. Ariel Wilson draws another one with 23 seconds left. Here we go. Wilson with the ball with 13. Bulls down by 2. They get it out to Levy. White out on her. 9 on the game clock. Are the Bulls just going to go for the win here with 6? With 5. Levy hands it off to Aveline with the chip up 3. Tough shot at the horn. It rims out, and that's the ball game.
Turns out it wasn't officially the ball game because the ball, A, went out of bounds off a Roadrunner, and B, there was 1/10 of a second left, which wasn't enough time to do anything. The Bulls never got a hope for it because Jenkins is 6 foot tall and knocked away the inbounds pass. Jose Fernandez told me that they were drawing up a 3 for Vicky Blasig to try and win it. She was covered. Romy Levy actually had a look at a 3, but was trying to get it, obviously, to the intended target on the play and ended up not working out. So the Bulls end up 19-14. And just for comparison's sake, that is now 14 straight years that the Bulls have won at least 19 games. For UTSA, that was the Roadrunners' 17th win. They hadn't won 19 games since 2008. So it's basically other teams' years, and it was going to be, as we always talked about, a wide-open conference where whoever won it was going to have to probably win 3 or 4 toss-up games in a row. And the Bulls had 2 toss-up games and went 1-1. UTSA had 2 toss-up games and went 1-1. They're done. They, last night in the semifinal, got eliminated by East Carolina, and UTSA was ahead by 9 at the midway point of the fourth quarter. Pirates' Danae McNeil, the defensive player of the year, had a steal in there, scored 6 quick points in the final minute. That was a 2-point game. So let's recap what happened since the Bulls' loss on Monday, and we'll talk about their possible postseason after that. After the Bulls' loss, North Texas, number 2 team in the conference, like Tulsa, the number 1 team in the conference, doing a lot of social media posts about, hey, they picked us down here and we're the champs. Yeah, they're done. 1-done. North Texas lost to Rice 61-59. North Texas's Desiree Colonel, who was a first-team all-conference player, at the free throw line down a point, 18 seconds left, missed them both. Missed a potential go-ahead layup after that. Earlier in the day, Tamira Poindexter, player of the year in the conference for number 1 seed Tulsa, missed 2 tying threes and 2 free throws in the final minute. My point is, not to highlight any others' sorrow, but just to point out the Bulls were not alone. And the only one of the 3 teams that tied for first place in the league to win was the last game on Monday, third-seeded Temple, and it was against last place Tulane, and they needed 3 overtimes. Last night, oh yeah, 2 more nail-biters. We mentioned how East Carolina came back to beat UTSA. By the way, that or none of East Carolina's 3 wins are an upset, including knocking off number 1 Tulsa. Why? They beat them during the regular season in their only meeting, and when they played UTSA, albeit early in the conference, East Carolina won 82-54. And then last night, Temple led in the final minute, got beat by Rice. So tonight, 9-seed East Carolina against 10-seed Rice. And the winner will almost certainly be a 15-seed and have to go somewhere tough to make the NCAA tournament. It's just a different year. And almost one where, frankly, the experience of going to the NCAA tournament is great, but I don't think the Bulls did enough this year to necessarily earn it. And in the end, maybe getting some wins at another event could actually be a better experience. And this year it is different. It's always just been the WNIT 64 teams, each league's best, including regular season champs that don't make the NCAA team guaranteed. And then the WBI, which is never an option for the Bulls. In this case, there is a new WBIT, and that's the preferred destination. That's going to be run by the NCAA. It's 32 teams. And here's a short clip of Jose Fernandez's post-game press conference. He would love to play in it.
You know, we'll see what happens Selection Sunday. We will accept an invite to WBIT if we are invited to play in it. If, you know, we're not invited to play there, you know, our season will be over. Ariel, Maria, and Ave... you know, those three seniors. Hopefully that wasn't the last game that they've played that, you know, they will play in our program.
So the one thing to keep an eye on, and I'll do it for you, is number one seeds not winning their conference tournaments in the non-power type leagues, because those teams are automatically going to make the WBIT. I think if most of the number one seeds take care of business, there'll be enough room for the Bulls, and we'll give you an update on that on Friday. There is another secondary tournament. The WNIT becomes that, and there's 48 spots in it, but that's a pay-for-play, and you just heard the head coach say they're not going that route. So it's possible their season is over. The season just got going as far as conference play for softball, and after beating Charlotte Friday in 11 innings, then dropping a doubleheader 5-1 and getting run ruled 12-1, it's not like the Bulls had an easy task ahead of them. Monday, going to an FGCU team that was 15-9 and had just beaten Florida State, and hit a two-run homer in the bottom of the sixth to beat the Bulls in the first game of Monday's doubleheader. Bulls were held to three hits. Peyton Dixon, tough loss, having struck out 11. And so here we go to the next game, and the teams exchange runs in the first inning, but it was 1-1 in the sixth after the Bulls had left the bases loaded in the fourth and the fifth. But then they finally came through. The freshman, Dania Brooks, a leadoff walk on a full count. Then an error by their third baseman. With two outs after a ground out moved the runners to second and third, Marissa Trivelpiece singled through the right side. Then in the next inning, Jamia Nelson with a wallop of a first career homer. Dixon, who had the heartbreaking loss earlier in the day, came on to pitch the last 2 2/3 innings for the win. Bulls drive home after their first road games of the year. Yeah, they started off 26 in a row at home. Then they got two against Colgate last night in because they were supposed to play Wednesday. Bulls have a conference road trip coming up, so things got moved around. And the Bulls actually fell behind. However, two runs immediately in the bottom of the first. Alexa Galligani walks, steals second. Bailey Dripola puts runners on the corners. Alex Wilkes, the freshman from Tampa, who started both ends of the doubleheader. Yeah, she's coming through. Ties it, and Orion Eigenman deep fly out, goes for a sack fly 2-1. Bulls grab two more in the bottom of the third as Miss Rivera hits a deep double to drive in both Elliott, who'd walked, and again Alex Wilkes, who'd singled. Bulls grab a run later on a double play ball, and a comfortable 5-1 win. Bell Sarge picks up the victory in the circle, going the first 4 2/3 innings. Lexi Kopko gave the Bulls four outs. And then the Bulls get pushed by a Colgate team that came to town 8-12 with a ERA of above 5, and Maya Cervedio frustrated them, as did the Colgate bats. They hit two home runs in the second for a 1-0 lead. Josie Foreman answered with an RBI single in the bottom half. But then in the sixth, another home run, and the Bulls were down going into their last at-bat. But a run in the seventh to tie and a run in the eighth to win both started off by extreme hustle. Tylee Vaughn, really full credit for how she started off the seventh, legging out, and I mean hustling, on what looked like a typical ground out. Ken Erickson immediately reviewed it. It took more time to review that and overturn it than it did for the Bulls to tie the game up after that happened, because the next two pitches, Jordan Cadleb, a sack bunt, and Josie Foreman, an RBI single. So Foreman, two RBI in the game. Eighth inning, again, hustle. Alexa Galligani, head first slide for an infield single, barely beat it out. Another perfect sack bunt next pitch from Olivia Elliott, and with first and second and one away, there's that freshman, Alex Wilkes, hitting the ball up the middle, and the Bulls win 3-2 in eight innings. They are now 21-9, right around the top 50 in RPI, and a big weekend series at Tulsa coming up. We'll preview on Friday's show. Alana Rivera now hitting .375 with 17 RBI, and Wilkes has gotten her batting average up to .342. Peyton Dixon is 10-2 with the 1-2 ERA. Bell Sarge's ERA below 2. Hey, we'll be right back at it with baseball tonight against Maine, 5:45 pregame. We'll tell you about the Black Bears and their 2-10 record. They did end a 5-game losing streak, fifth of which was a 19-16 loss to Bethune-Cookman before getting the Wildcats over in Daytona. Hey, smart scheduling for Maine to come down to Florida and get a midweek in against the Bulls. Bobby Bowser obviously was going to be the AAC player of the week. 5 homers, 16 RBI will do that, and 2 days in Jacksonville, 13 of those RBI and 3 of those homers, and becoming the first Bull to hit for the cycle in nearly 20 seasons. He was also named the National Player of the Week by the astute National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association. Again, we'll be on the air and give you a full preview of the Black Bears tonight from Red McEwen Field. More Conference Player of the Week honors. Grace Schumacher from Australia, of course, the Bulls' standout number one singles player, won in singles and doubles Sunday against VCU, which came in ranked 54th in a Bulls victory. Then they got moved up to 63rd in the rankings and unfortunately lost to East Tennessee State. Now, the Buccaneers came to town 7-5, but you look at their five losses, they got swept by two top 20 teams, and then they lost to three power conference teams, Kentucky, Clemson, and Vatek, but all of them were 5-2 or closer, so they had been battle-tested. And it came down to the last match after Grace Schumacher herself evened the score at 3 apiece. Gargi Parwar, who had taken her second set, lost 6-3 in the third. By the way, it was the second straight match where the Bulls lost the doubles point despite winning the one set they won, 6-love. Right back at it on Wednesday at noon against Cleveland State. Then they will take on 40th-ranked Yale this weekend. The Bulls are actually the fifth-ranked team in the conference, so it's a good league for women's tennis with the additions of some of the new teams, Charlotte and FAU in particular. It's even better on the men's side, where Memphis is ranked 20th in the nation, by the way. FAU top 50. Charlotte and Rice also ranked. To be ranked, you must be top 75. Alvin Todorica on the men's side is the second highest ranked individual in the top 50. Basically, it's shaping up to be just like last year, where the Bulls are going to be involved in any match they play in their conference in a tight one, but they're probably going to have to go winning the conference tournament route because right now they're at 8-9. Having said that, they got an easy win on Tuesday against a conference team, UAB, in a match in which, again, they lost the doubles point, but not only won the four singles matches they needed to, won them easily. Only at number two singles did the Bulls win a set any quote-unquote closer than 6-2. So the Bulls are 8-9, and they head to San Diego for a big event this weekend. We'll talk to you about it on Friday. That's going to wrap up the Wednesday program. Again, we'll be on the air with baseball. Until then, we will play between 10 and 5:45 the February conference wins for men's basketball. Last year, we went through January. And for time considerations, we will just give you the second halves of the Charlotte and UTSA games, just to squeeze it all in. A lot of wins to get on the air, so we're doing that for you, getting ready for, of course, Friday's conference tournament opener. Thanks for listening to Bulls Beat. I'm Derek Sharp.